This week on Behind the Lens.
There's a civil war going on out there between our common citizens. Is there so much contamination and pollution from industry that has not been accounted or recovered for, that these men are fighting for survival?
Emotional testimony at a public hearing on proposed changes to state environmental cleanup standards. Some residents would rather DEQ hold industry's feet to the fire. Also, four failing schools in New Orleans have game plans for getting their acts together. And a federal judge allows a civil rights case against the Orleans DA to proceed. I'm Tom Wright. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
On March 1st, the Friday before Mardi Gras, the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality held a hearing to take public comments on a big change in state regulations. DEQ's Risk Evaluation Corrective Action Program, or RECAP, has been around since 1998. This regulation establishes minimum remediation standards for present and past uncontrolled constituent releases. Put simply, when an oil and gas company or similar industry leaves a mess at a work site in Louisiana, RECAP rules dictate what they have to clean up. Now, DEQ says it wants to revise RECAP standards, possibly reducing the costs of remediating sites across the state. But opponents of the move warn it would allow polluters to leave more toxic waste at sites across the state. We're going to play a couple of excerpts from last week's testimony. First is Wilma Subra. She's a chemist representing the Louisiana Environmental Action Network. Subra presented a brief technical assessment of the proposed RECAP revisions.
The RECAP goal is to ensure that risks are properly evaluated to protect human health and the environment. The current changes to the screening standard for both soil and groundwater are flawed. There are 138 contaminants that are listed in tables 1, 2, and 3 of the revised RECAP screening standards. They lack 12 chemicals, and their screening standards, which were included in the 2003 version of the RECAP standards. These chemicals no longer listed, therefore no longer regulated, and their screening standards are isonaphthalene, dibenzofuran, 1,3-dichlorobenzene, dimethyl phthalate, di-N-octyl phthalate, 2,3-and-4 nitroaniline, phenanthrene, total petroleum hydrocarbons, GRN, GRO, DRO, and ORG. The chronic health impacts that are associated with these 12 chemicals that are no longer included in the RECAP are known to be teratogens, possible teratogens, cause decreased fertility in males and females, may affect the liver, cause mutations, gene changes, and account for low blood counts. These chemicals and the total petroleum hydrocarbon fractions should not have been removed from the RECAP list and their screening standards and should have remained on the RECAP list. The total petroleum hydrocarbon fractions are known to contaminate soil and groundwater and are the most appropriately measured in assessing petroleum hydrocarbon contamination in both soil and groundwater, and identified and dealt with by using the total petroleum hydrocarbon fractions. The chemicals that have their screening standard concentrations increased and thus have an increase in human health risk have the following what are classified as non-carcinogenic critical health issues. Those chemicals affect the liver, the neurological system, the respiratory system, the circulatory system, the gastrointestinal system, kidneys, vascular system, circulatory system, hematological systems, and nervous systems. They cause spleen toxicity, developmental effects, cholesterol level, fetal toxicity, and they alter the blood. The increase in chemical concentrations in the proposed revisions of RECAP of 68 to 70% of the chemicals in soil associated with non-industrial and industrial sites, with the associated increase in risk to human health, is totally inappropriate. The results will be chemicals that will be allowed to remain in the soil at non-industrial and at industrial sites at higher concentrations, which will serve as potential sources of pathways of exposure to humans occupying the areas. The increase in chemical concentrations in soil, which impact groundwater and are in groundwater, a 54% and 38% increase, respectively, is also inappropriate and can serve to directly negatively impact human health through exposure to contaminated water sources. Such increases in the potential for exposure to humans at higher residential concentrations does not ensure what the document said in request for this change. Quote, it does not ensure response actions to chemical releases in the environment that are protective of human health and the environment, as stated in the request for rulemaking. An increase in acceptable concentrations equals an increase in risk.
Well, Ms. Supra, speaking there, not all of last week's testimony was technical in nature. Some of it was deeply personal. What you're about to hear is an extended portion of comments by Gene LeBlanc. He's an Ascension Parish resident, and he and his family live near the infamous Sorrento landfill.
When I heard about the meeting, I wanted to be here because my picture in my mind of the impressed situation that would be the men and the ladies that survive off of our natural resources would be in this meeting to contend for themselves. They're not here, so I'll speak for them. One of my primary hobbies is I'm a recreational hunter and fisherman. At one particular time, I thought I might venture off into commercializing crawfishing. And I'm going to tell you what that's like. And I'm talking about in the Atchafalaya Basin, where there are hundreds of thousands of free acres. But when I went to the swamps, there's only a certain portion of those thousands and thousands of acres that are productive. And I'm not the kind of person that would like to fight to make a living. The acreage that's productive left in our natural resources of the Atchafalaya Basin, there's a civil war going on out there between our common citizens. Call it hanging traps if you're within a certain distance, which I knew nothing about. I found out about it. But the gist of what I'm saying is there's so much contamination and pollution from industry that has not been accounted or recovered for that these men are fighting for survival. Why they're not here today is beyond me. The other thing is I love deer hunting. I had a camp in the Atchafalaya Basin, and all my hunting was done on Louisiana spoil banks, what they call reclaimed land that was caused by siltation. When I was 18 years old, it wasn't there, but it's there now. And I called for the wildlife and fisheries to make an evaluation of the land. There was a certain section in the land, about 400 or 500 acres, that had, in the middle of the swamps, had an embankment, a levee. They done it on purpose to cause siltation, to replenish the land that Shell Oil Company destroyed at Tiger Island in the Atchafalaya Basin. And if you go out there right now, they don't have a cypress tree within 5 square miles of that place. Now, I'm talking about trees because I happen to own some of them. Where I live at, I reside on family land that's been in the family for 95 years. I feel like I'm responsible because I inherited it to preserve it and to carry on to the next generation and leave something for the next generation to come. But let me tell you what's going on. In 12 short years of my navigating this 173 acres, and I'm telling you how fragile our resources are, they classify my land at the courthouse as Louisiana swamp hardwood bottoms. I can't push a tree down over there. I can cut them down, but I can't push them over. Well, I looked into that because when I push a tree over, I destroy a colony of microorganisms. I can't do that. But across the canal from where I live at is 200 plus acres of a 175-foot mountain that's full of the most toxic chemicals that's being generated from these chemical facilities that we here to take up for? DEQ? No way. Before my time ends, I want you to let, I'm against that. In fact, the restricted level on controlling their emissions and their pollutions, they need to pay double for anything they do. In my neighborhood, there are certain neighbors that fish in the swamps that adjoin my property. I buy their crawfish at a local seafood distributor to help him to keep the economy going, to keep cash flow going, and to fill my Cajun belly. When I eat crawfish, I like Louisiana seasoning on them. Not chemical pollution. Zatarain's will do. Caustic soda, benzene, isopropylene, chlorophene, chloride ejections into the emissions. I can't breathe it, much less eat it. I like to water ski. You can't do it no more on Blind River. And you can't eat the fish from it. The canal that passes from my house that's draining Pelican Point, Gonzales, all these toxic chemicals manufacturers, they don't mind letting a little go in there either. Hey, the Department of Environmental Quality, I didn't even know who they were 12 years ago. Still don't know who they are. But they say Department of Environmental Quality. Let me tell you what. I don't think they are guarding the environment at all. It's been my experience that they contend for the protection of industry. That's another topic. Louisiana industry is not owned by Louisiana Commerce. They come in, they take in our resources and convert it to a pelletized product or something that they can inject in an interstate pipeline, and they're bringing it out of Louisiana. I work in industrial facilities, chemical plants for 35 years. I'm an industrial instrument technician. One of my duties was the outflow water going to the Mississippi River. I had, and every year on my evaluation to my employer, I'd have to justify my calibration expertise and why it was so restrictive, because to balance that water, you either have to use caustic soda or sulfuric acid to neutralize the chemical emissions that they're putting in the river to a pH of 7. They said it was acceptable. I said, I don't know what they're doing here. They taking all this chemical, they balance it at the pH, they inject it in a high velocity river going to the Gulf of Mexico. 25 years later, don't put it in the river no more. Why? Because they got a dead spot in the Gulf of Mexico. You know why they call Louisiana the sportsman paradise? Because we have things, wildlife here that draws people from all over the world. I don't know why you want to live here if you can't eat the crawfish and you can't. I went to the local seafood market Saturday to buy a couple of pounds of catfish and shrimp. Guess where they come from? Vietnam. I say, wait up. The sign out there said, Louisiana Cajun Seafood. Where is it? Well, this fish is extra clean. I say, I came here to get Louisiana catfish and Gulf shrimp from the Gulf of Mexico. They don't have them. You know why? Because it's unedible. Nobody's facing the facts. Our resources are being destroyed by high-dollar fat cat muscle men in the chemical industry. I'm deaf from working in these places, and I got a weird little cough from working in these places and breathing the emissions that I got to wake up sometimes in the middle of my night and leave my house because I can't breathe the emissions from my neighbor. If you think it's a joke, I'll invite anybody in this place to come on any Saturday evening. We'll barbecue steaks and see if we can, who can breathe the air the best. My house is full of hydrogen sulfide gas or worse. And I know it, because all I got to do is look back at the table I'm sitting at. I have a certified hydrogen detector analyzer in my house that reports to a 24-hour chart recorder. I had some folks come in today, and I showed them, I said, anytime that red mark right there goes to one, it's not acknowledged by the DEQ. They said it's an amateur's thing. I don't think it is. I bought it from an engineering firm. It's certified. But they won't recognize it. I'm a troublemaker. I'm not the troublemaker. I'm Louisiana trying to survive in Louisiana. Where I live at, I grew up as a child playing and navigating these woods. I take my grandbabies down to bayou to fish or four-wheeler ride. I wish I had the pictures. Papa, I want to go fishing today. We can't go today, pal, because we can't breathe down there today. I'm going to wear the mask, and he did. I put the fresh air mask on him and brought him to the culvert where the soccer is at. Guess what? Papa, I'm going to get Granny to cook the soccer legs for us. I say, maybe. But while I was cleaning them, the same smell that chokes me in my bed at night from time to time is in the guts of them fish. I said, baby, we can't eat that fish. Anyway, that's enough of all that. DEQ, do not allow it. Hold them to the guns. They're not from Louisiana. They're not our people. They're not our friends, and they're not our kindred. They're using us for their own high-dollar expectations.
Gene LeBlanc, speaking last week on proposed revisions to the Risk Evaluation Corrective Action Program. We've had a big development on this story. Just a week later, March 8th, the LENS received word that DEQ is putting the recap revision process on hold. Spokesman Greg Langley tells us the department wants to do more public outreach now on those potential revisions before pushing forward. In education news, Orleans Parish school officials are working with 4 F-rated charter schools to improve academics and operations rather than revoking their contracts. We got a briefing on these improvement plans from Marta Jusen.
You're looking at 4 F-rated schools with game plans for improvement. Which are those 4?
Joseph Craig, Robert Moten, Landry Walker, and Singleton are all creating improvement plans to get their F letter grades up from this last year.
So there are 3 other F-rated schools closing this summer. Why did these 4 schools get another year while these other 3 are closing?
The district decided to close those other 3 schools because they were in the final year of their charter contracts, and it seems like the district is going to be a little more willing to work with schools that have an F not in their final year to try to get that grade up. But if a school does have an F 2 years in a row, the district's going to send them into revocation proceedings.
Okay. So 3 of the 4 continuing schools indicate they'll switch to Tier 1 curricula. What does that mean?
Tier 1 curriculum is a label that the state has created for different types of curriculum. And these are, you know, textbooks and curriculum created by companies. And they either receive a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 label, depending on how closely they align to the state standards. So the state recommends using Tier 1 because that will best teach students to prepare for state exams.
What else are these schools doing as far as improvement planning?
Yeah, I read through their improvement plans. And Moten, for example, says they've hired 50% more teachers than they had last year. I asked how they were able to do that because that sounds pretty expensive. And they said that in the past, they just hadn't been fully using their funding, so they're doing that. They've added social worker, and they've added a couple other positions to help students. And over at Landry Walker, they said they're going to try to tailor their ACT classes for kids. They're going to try to make their diplomas stronger, which counts at high schools for how well the school does. They're partnering with Youth Force NOLA to try and increase that diploma strength. And they also said they're going to create a dropout prevention team to try and keep kids in school.
What happens if they don't improve their performance after another school year?
If the schools don't improve and get an F for a second year in a row, then the district is going to look at revoking their charter. That's a process they would go through that would initiate next school year after the grades come out in the fall.
Okay. Marta Jusen reporting on our school system in Orleans Parish. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We want to recap a big development last week in criminal justice. A federal civil rights lawsuit against Orleans Parish District Attorney Leon Canizero and several of his prosecutors will be allowed to go forward. The plaintiffs allege the prosecutors violated people's civil rights through the use of fake subpoenas and unlawfully obtained arrest warrants against witnesses and crime victims. Lens editor Charles Maldonado has been closely following this case.
Charles, who filed the suit and what are they alleging?
The suit was filed by the ACLU National, the ACLU of Louisiana, and the Civil Rights Corps, which is a Washington, D.C.-based civil rights group. And it was filed on behalf of a number of witnesses of crime and victims of crime who had allegedly been subject to one of 2 types of misconduct. Either they received a fake subpoena at some point ordering them to appear for a private meeting with a prosecutor, subpoenas that were not ever authorized by a judge and therefore were not legal, or they were subject to an improper use of in Louisiana law, there's something called a material witness warrant, which allows prosecutors to request that a witness who is allegedly uncooperative to be arrested and held pending their testimony in court. The plaintiffs either received a fake subpoena, were allegedly improperly jailed, or both of those things.
What was the DA's defense in this suit? They tried to have the suit itself thrown out, basically.
Yeah, they last year they filed to have the suit dismissed. The major arguments concerned prosecutorial immunity, which is a longstanding legal precedent established by the Supreme Court. There's two types of immunity. One of them, called absolute immunity, holds that law enforcement basically is doing something in the course of their jobs that they can be held immune from civil liability. So the DA primarily argued that. There's another type of immunity called qualified immunity, which applies in certain circumstances when absolute immunity wouldn't apply. So those were the two major arguments that they made.
And apparently the judge didn't buy those arguments.
The judge bought some of those arguments, but as it relates to the overall absolute immunity, the judge threw out much of that argument. Basically, the judge said that absolute immunity cannot apply in this case because what you were doing as prosecutors specifically where it relates to the fake subpoenas, it wasn't geared toward the proper functioning of the court system. In fact, you were actually usurping the court's role in the functioning of the court system. She referred to the allegation of the use of fake subpoenas as being an allegation of systematic fraud. That applied to claims that were against the office itself. So they sued the DA in his official capacity and prosecutors in their official capacity. And only one of those counts was thrown out in its entirety. And that was a count for prolonged detention. And this was for people who were allegedly improperly arrested on material witness warrants and then held for prolonged periods of time without going before a judge. The judge found that the clerk of court is responsible for getting people in front of a judge, not the DA's office. So she threw out that count in its entirety. But the other counts, the other eight counts, those were all kept. But certain prosecutors named in some of those counts were found to have enjoyed qualified immunity. We haven't heard anything from the DA's office about how they're going to respond to this ruling yet. So we're just going to have to keep an eye on this docket in the federal court.
Charles Maldonado reporting there. We want to remind you that your support makes this nonprofit investigative reporting possible. Consider making a donation today. Go to support.thelensnola.org. I'm Tom Wright. Thank you for getting behind the lens.